welcome to Project Wellness. My name's Dominique Liv-Kamal, and Project Wellness is something that I just love doing. And I'm in London at the moment at the International Congress of Naturopathic Medicine. I just presented this morning, which is really exciting, on my work on herbal first aid, and I'll be putting that up here on Project Wellness as well. But in the whole conference, I came across a super, super inspiring woman, and she's a Canadian, and her name is Susanna Serenko. She's a naturopath, and she works in the States, and she's compiled 12 super comprehensive books on naturopathic medicine, going back through the history. Hello, Susanna. Welcome to Project Wellness. Can you tell us about yourself?
I can. I certainly can. It's been really great to be at the ICNM for the sixth year. It's the ICNM. The little bit of history of the ICNM is that I and Anne-Marie Narboni started it in an elevator in New York City 7 years ago because we were so frustrated with integrative medicine in America. The project that I want to talk about, though, is this book project that I've been working on for the last decade. And it's based on a body of literature that is found exclusively and only in the library of National University of Natural Medicine, which is the oldest naturopathic school in North America that's located in Portland, Oregon. And at NUNM, they have this incredible, incredible rare book room where we have probably the best collection of incredibly amazing books from three longer, actually we our oldest book has been written in the 16th century. We have a Gerard Herbal. But my book project is a collection of 12 books based upon the work of Benedict Lust. And Benedict Lust, at 24 years old, started publishing in New York City. He came to America in 1892, not as a man interested in naturopathic medicine or healing. He came as a first-class waiter. He wanted to discover America. It was his childhood dream to be in America. And he had an accident while visiting the World Health or the World Fair in Chicago in 1893. And based on his injuries, or because of his injuries, he returned to Germany, where he was born, to study and to get help from Sebastian Kneipp. And after his 8 months spent with Sebastian Kneipp, he was absolutely on fire to change the world. He returned to New York City in 1895, approximately, and he published. And he published for 50 years. He published from 1896 until his death 50 years later in 1845. So this book project is based upon the articles found in his magazines, written by all sorts of men and women so dedicated to healing and health and naturopathy. The purpose of writing these books was to make available to other people in my profession, in our profession, some of the seminal works of our early founders. When I started going to because I work at National University, I had the ability to go to the rare book room, and the collection
of the Benedict List journals were just so inspiring and so incredible. And I had this guilt that I could look at these books when I wanted to. Each of the books contain valuable information, and it needed to be shared because these books are not found in many libraries. I only know of we have eight naturopathic libraries or eight naturopathic schools in America and Canada, and NUNM is the only school that has the complete collection of the Benedict List publications.
This is really exciting. I've got a book here in front of me, Hydrotherapy in Naturopathic Medicine, in their own words. I'm not sure. What number book is this? Is this like book number one? Hydrotherapies are so popular again now. Can you just tell me, can we just talk about the Hydrotherapy in Naturopathic Medicine book for a moment?
Okay. Well, Hydrotherapy is book 10, and Hydrotherapy, if you look at the cover, you're going to see a very large portrait of Vincent Priestnitz, and to the right of him is Sebastian Kneipp, Father Sebastian Kneipp, with his famous watering can. This cover was conflicting. I was conflicted with this cover because Kneipp was living when the early naturopaths were being formed in New York City. Most of the people that formed this body of men and women founding this new movement of health in New York City were mostly Germans and in the late 19th century. And so they all knew of Sebastian Kneipp, and many of them studied with Sebastian Kneipp. And in fact, the Hydrotherapy book there's a lot of articles by Kneipp. Priestnitz was born in 1799, died in 1851. And he wasn't even alive when the early naturopaths were forming their movement. But Priestnitz, why he's so prominent on the cover of this book is that he is the father of hydrotherapy. He was the son of a blind farmer, illiterate, didn't write, barely read, and he learned by observation in nature hydrotherapy, and it only took more research of looking into Vincent Priestnitz of how valuable he was. I've written several articles that I've published on Vincent Priestnitz, and here was a man that was living in a very remote area in Austria, visited by thousands of patients yearly. And the patients that came to him invariably had gone to see their local medical doctors. And the standard of care in the times of Priestnitz was calomel. And calomel was mercury chloride. It was administered in gram doses. So the kind of patient that Priestnitz was treating incredibly successfully was mercury toxicity. And he did it just with water. So there's a lot of commonality between Vincent Priestnitz and Kneipp. They both did hydrotherapy, water cure. They both had this instinctive diagnostic ability to just look at a person and know exactly what was wrong with the patient. And their only means of cure was essentially water. In the case of Kneipp, he used herbs. They treated very poor people. They had thousands of people come to visit them. And they created enormous cities and towns around where they worked, because so many people were seeking out their care.
So what is hydrotherapy? Can you tell us what it is, and in the book, please? Okay.
So hydrotherapy is using water as a medical agent to bring about healing. And the kind of water, the temperature of the water used both by Knaip and Priestnitz was cold. And cold water was considered very important in moving blood. So the early naturopaths talk about the seed of disease and talk about how disease is created. And hydrotherapy allowed the body to move blood, to change in its movement, and do the healing. So hydrotherapy included various water applications that included douches, compresses, cold compresses, foot baths, half baths, full baths, sitz baths. Let me think. There's so many different hydrotherapies. Let me look at the book here.
Did they do water fasting in the way that we do today? Like they'd go for 1 day or 7 days or 10 days just drinking water? Was that part of it?
The man that really brought fasting to the forefront was a man by the name of Arnold Arendt. And Arnold Arendt, also another German, moved to America, and he started publishing several books on the mucus diet, the mucus-less diet. So he advocated eliminating farinaceous or carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, and dairy, and had so many of his patients do fasting, and fasting could consist of 1 day, 3 days, or a total fast, which would last as long as a month or even longer.
Because fasting is super popular today now, and you're talking about eliminating carbohydrates and dairy, which is very popular now in ketogenic diets and in our modern world. What year are we here, Suzanne?
Well, Arendt died in 1922, and most of his publications were occurring in the early 19th century. So he was a vegetarian. He suffered horrendous health. He had so many horrendous health issues. Unable to work, he was so empowered by fasting that he would travel to the south of France, to Algeria, to northern Africa, and engage upon these long fasts to recover his health. And when he would return to his family in Germany, they were horrified that he would be fasting. But each time he fasted, he felt better. He eventually moved to America and was writing, was lecturing to large audiences on fasting. And he was quite a celebrity his entire life, and he died quite young in 1922.
Okay, so with these 12 volumes that you've written, so far, everything that you've told me is what we do in current practice today. Could you just give me some pearls and gems about like what kind of information are in the books that really hasn't changed in time?
Well, dietetics has always been the core, along with hydrotherapy, getting fresh air, eating healthy food, drinking good water, good pure water, breathing pure air, were the essentials of the original naturopaths. and dietetics was so core to the early naturopaths. In fact, that some of them who advocated vegetarian diets would be arrested. And one example would have been Eugene Christian, who wrote volumes on vegetarian diets. And he actually was invited to serve a banquet that was held in the White House in Washington, D.C., that consisted entirely of a vegetarian diet. And this man got arrested because he advocated vegetarian eating. This was not popular amongst the medical establishment. They considered when people were sick, they needed to have a strengthening diet consisting of beef broth and lots of meat and lots of food. And we as naturopaths know that when we get sick, we actually need to give our stomach a rest and not eat when we're very, very sick. Another aspect of dietetics that was very, very valuable for me is that we tend to, in today's culture, we have a lot of fast food, we tend to inhale our food, and we have completely forgotten how to chew our food. And another man by the name of Horace Fletcher, who wrote a book, ABC of Nutrition, or ABZ of Nutrition, and published in 1903, this book just radicalized nutrition and all of our ideas of food, is that it doesn't matter what we put in our mouth, if we're not chewing it, it's not going to be made available in our stomach and for our tissues. So the most amazing thing that I discovered in dietetics was mastication, that we need to chew our food. And when we start chewing our food, then having three bowel movements a day is a very, it's possible. It is not a fiction. And it's more fiction having only one bowel movement a day as being normal. Three bowel movements a day, if we eat three meals a day, we should be having three bowel movements a day. So that I learned. Some of the other pearls were that I learned by doing this book project. This book project consists of over 5,000 pages, over 800 articles. Is that these early naturopaths did not have an armamentarium consisting of all kinds of bottles of magic potions. They literally used fresh air, sunshine, diet, a healthy diet, good water, hydrotherapy, baths, exercise. And they also had, they really embodied body-mind medicine. And they also believed so strongly in ethical work practices, not having people work 14 hours a day without breaks. So they were, their tool set, their toolbox was very, very small. And yet they were able to cure chronic diseases ranging from cancer to headaches to skin diseases to asthma. And all of the convention, all of the acute diseases that were so prominent in the early 20th century. In fact, if we were living in 1900, we would be dying. The number one cause of mortality was the simple flu or pneumonia. And the naturopaths were incredible in curing flus. Medicine had no tools, nothing to offer these simple, these diseases that today we we think nothing of the flu or pneumonia. And yet, the early naturopaths were very capable, very effective in treating these diseases. And a really wonderful example of how effective they were in their treatment is looking at the Spanish flu that brought World War I to its knees in 1918. During World War I, 9 million people died. But the Spanish flu has been responsible for between 50 to 100 million people in a very, very short period of time. And people died very rapidly. It was the age of aspirin, and aspirin is partially responsible for so many people dying because it was being administered by medical doctors in gram doses. But the Spanish flu, most people not having access to medicine and had access to naturopathy and hydrotherapy, fasting, and just good nursing, had a mortality rate of less than 1%. The people that were being treated by medical doctors who had the Spanish flu, their mortality rate ranged between 28% to 80%. And it was medicine had no solution for treating the Spanish flu. And currently we are, especially in the United States, there's this huge fear that the next epidemic is going to be coming. And there's this horrific mandatory vaccination programs that is going state to state, mandating compulsory vaccination. So this book collection is far more relevant to us. And when we look at the acute disease book, the clinical pearls, and the acute diseases, we really need to know this information. These early naturopaths had no problem treating diphtheria, smallpox, scarlet fever, influenza. It was just very simple. It was absolutely simple. And going back to where I began with Vincent Prisnitz made a statement that if you have an acute disease and you do not know how to treat it, you are not qualified to be doctoring. And acute diseases was one of the easiest diseases to treat. And unfortunately, allopathic medicine only knows how to suppress acute diseases. It doesn't know how to engage with a fever and use that fever, which is just a curative process, to cure an infectious agent out of the body.
This is incredible information, Suzanne. I'm really, really impressed because inside these books, which we are definitely getting the entire volume for our reference library in the herbal dispensary at the medicine room. Don't worry, guys, we're getting this one. This is amazing. We've got this. 12 books that look incredible. I can't wait to read them all. Looking at this now, do you think that if people were reading these books, they would have more empowerment for their own health?
Oh my gosh, these books are life changing. They're absolutely life changing. They offer very simple solutions. And there was a doctor by the name of Carl Strew. He worked in Chicago. He trained in Munich and various universities in Germany. And he got so disgruntled with medicine. And in 1912, he made this statement that we just over-medicalize, we over-prescribe, and this is 1912. And that we're treating symptomatically, and that's not what medicine is about. Medicine naturopathic medicine is about lifestyle change. And when these early pioneers were treating and changing people's dysfunctional lifestyles and transforming them into healthy, vibrant souls, they were living long lives, and they were they had definitely empowerment. The tools that we have are free, are literally free. Water is so accessible. We all have access to water. We all have access to wild plants if we go out into the countryside and learn to identify plants. We all could use sunshine. We're all addicted to vitamin D therapies, but the early naturopaths recognized the importance of sunshine and getting enough of sun rays. They also knew about hardening and cold water strengthening the body. It's so simple. Just so simple.
You know, one of the things that I do is I practice Kundalini yoga, which was brought to the West by Yogi Bhajan in the 1970s. And I started like teaching Kundalini yoga and doing my teacher training in 2012. Since then, I have a cold shower every morning before I do my yoga practice. Can you tell me, like, what other things I should be doing when it comes to, you know, like, keeping myself healthy? And, like, I'm super stoked that cold water therapy is part of this because I do that. Mm-hmm. And I love the vegetarian diet, and I like the idea of sunshine and air and breath. These are all common things. So what else am I going to be doing, Suzanne?
My absolute favorite regime that I do every morning is that I have a very small children's swimming pool in my backyard. It's filled with 3 to 5, 6 inches of cold water from the tap. And every morning, because I'm surrounded by people, I live in a city, I have to put on a bathing suit. I go into my bath, in my bathtub in the backyard, and I do water treading. So water treading consists of walking in the cold water. And because it can become very cold at night in my town in Portland, Oregon, the ambient air may not feel cold, but the water itself is just freezing cold. So if I can tread in my bathtub, in my little swimming pool, for about 20 seconds, then I can do the next 2 steps of this natural bath. So the second step is, after walking and treading in the water, I get out of the bathtub, or the kiddie swimming pool, and I sit into the tub with my pelvis in the water, and I splash water, and I'm using friction. I'm splashing water onto my abdomen, and I'm rubbing my belly, and I'm splashing more water, and I continue to do that for another 20 seconds. Then the final finale is I lay down into the tub, and I go back and forth. So there's lots of movement. I'm back and forth, and I do that for 20 seconds. I get out of the tub, and I absolutely feel, I have this feeling of euphoria. I feel this energy moving from the bottom of my spine all the way up to my head. And I feel euphoric. I just have the most amazing energy all day. And I have to tell you, writing 12 books actually my publisher has reminded me that I've completed this book, this 12-volume book set, in only 7 years, comes with incredible stress, because it's not my boss is me. I am the worst boss. I make incredible demands on myself. I have just knowing this natural bath has been, it has made this book project possible. And I also, it isn't really, this book project, I don't even see myself as the one who compiled it. It just feels like somebody else must have done it. And it is all the men and women that have come before us. I lie at their feet in gratitude that they took the time from leading very busy lives, taking time to write articles that can now be made accessible for us. It is the most incredible gift that they have left behind. I tell all my students, because I have had lots of students help me with this project, transcribing, scanning images, is that we all need to leave behind some written knowledge, because we all are contributing to the wealth of what naturopathy has given to us and that we can now give to others.
Okay, so while you were working on this project, when you were learning and reading about something, did you, because I get quite obsessive when I'm writing and when I'm doing my work, and I'll read something or I'll learn something. Like earlier today, there was, you know, the old great cure for cancer, which has been around since like forever. And one of the speakers was talking about that today. And then just now when we were coming for our interview, I saw a bunch of grapes there. So I was like, oh, grapes. And so now I just want to go and do like a grape cleanse for a few days. Like, I love that idea. Did you find that when you were writing and when you were working, can you tell me about some of the things that you kind of like experienced, read about, and then became a little bit sort of obsessed with, I guess would be my word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obsession, yes. There were so many times. I was really amazed with the herbal book. So it was Herbs in Naturopathic Medicine. And on the cover, there's four plants. Plantain, elder, nettle, and I said elderflower. I'm just trying to think of the book cover. Anyways, and oh, shade grass or watergrass, or we also call it equisetum. And Knipe realized that so many of the people that came to him for help weren't always embracing cold water. So he had herbal remedies that he would apply, that he would concoct and make decoctions and add to hot water or warm water so that people could get the benefit of water plus in combination with the herbs. And so Knipe had used, he had discovered hayflower. And hayflower is the remnants that one finds at the bottom of a haystack. And hayflowers was his remedy for cellulitis, for blood poisoning, for children that had measles or smallpox or scarlet fever. So he would do a hay shirt. So he would make a decoction of hayflower. It would be hot. He'd add either compresses or shirts, wring it out and apply it to children, and then they would put a covering over it of the shirt or the compress. And reading some of these cases where he was just using this simple metal, because I've been a farmer's daughter, and hayflower is just hay. It's amazing what he was able to cure. Even cancer, it was just astonishing. Some other obsessions that I had were, and I love mud. I am just absolutely passionate about peloids, which is the medical term for mud therapy. There was one doctor by the name of Adolf Just, and you know, he's on the cover of Philosophy in Naturopathic Medicine, and I tease my husband and I say, you know, if he was still alive, I'd probably believe you for this man, because he just worshipped mud and earth cure. And he would have his patients laying on the earth. He would apply earth. He had no fear of using earth on any kind of skin ailment. He would apply earth instead of an abdominal wet water application or compress. He would instead use earth on the abdomen. His curing of so many diseases was just astounding. Another obsession that I have, and it is an obsession, was the work of Louis Kuna. Louis Kuna was born in 1835, died in 1901. But essentially, he wrote a book called The New Science of Healing. It's available online. And he essentially wrote the foundation for what became naturopathic medicine. And I also have to add that Adolf Joest, who wrote a book in 1896, A Return to Nature, these two books by Kuna, The New Science of Healing, and Joest's book, Return to Nature, were seminal for any early naturopath that was practicing in the early 20th century. These books became, it changed who we became. Rather than becoming canipians doing just doing water therapy, it exploded our avenues of how to treat people through diet, through, and Kuna was a vegetarian, so he advocated a vegetarian diet. He used very simple tools such as steam baths and Sitz friction baths. Joest used earth cure. He also was a vegetarian. He took people into the country and had them sleeping on the ground, walking barefoot on the ground. These two men that were followed by so many men and women just were on fire to create a movement, to create a new medicine for people. And if I can just summarize this collection, it was in celebration of medical freedom. We really do not have medical freedom today. We are curtailed in what we can do in some countries, the types of diseases that we can cure or treat. We are always overshadowed by allopathic medicine, that they are the only ones that officially, that have the right to treat people. The early naturopaths knew that they knew the power of nature. They saw it in their patients. They saw it in their practice. They saw how people transformed. And nature is not for sale. Nature is available to all of us. And what the early naturopaths stood for was medical freedom that we all deserve to be, choosing who we find to treat us and who we can, who has the right to treat. We all have the right to treat.
Thank you, Suzanne. This is an incredible conversation I'm having with you. I've got the books here. I'm just looking through them. How can people follow up from here? How would they be able to get hold of these books? And to how do we get them? I know I'm going to get them. How can everyone else get them?
Okay. There's probably three ways that you can get them. Probably the first way is there's ISBN numbers, and they could probably find them online. You could go to your local bookstore with the ISBN numbers that I will make available to you, and order them through your local bookstore. You can order them on Amazon, or you could also go to the NUNM Press website. And so I make no money from these books, and I really want to make sure that everybody knows that. I have given all the copyright to NUNM Press, which is a nonprofit press located at the oldest naturopathic school in America. It's probably the cheapest is just maybe through Amazon or your local bookstore.
So it's called the Hevert Collection.
Hevert.
H-E-V-E-R-T Collection by Susanna Sharenko. It is looking pretty good. $27.95 US per copy through NUM Press, www.nunm.edu. Thank you so much, Suzanne, for visiting me today and chatting to me.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for this interview. And God bless.
Blessings. Thank you. This is Dominique Liv-Kamel. You're listening to Project Wellness. We're at the ICNM conference in London. And the Hevert Collection. Get hold of it. Empower yourself more with medical wellness. Have herbal freedom. Have medical freedom. That's where it's at, guys, and that's what we want. Blessings, light, and love. Have a great day.